Good evening, everybody. Good evening, old school. Coming live from Valrico, Florida. You'll hear the music again because I'm a hack. I need a board operator, but we'll get through that. I am on the shitty camera because I have a guest in the studio, and he's so much more handsome than me. I want to give him the high-definition camera. To your chagrin, I think, actually, though, he has facial hair that looks like Yukon Cornelius, and he has a hat on, so I don't know if you can even see him, but we're going to go to a split view here, and you're going to see Mark Cook and old school in the studio. There we have dual cameras. Mark, you can't see all this cool shit, but we keep it up on Ustream. So if you ever have nothing to do like today when you're listening to Elvis records, you can go back and listen to the mad quality we lay down on this show.
So the one that I was on last time, I can go back and do archive these things?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Not only do we archive the audio on our podcast, we archive the video on Ustream.
Well, ladies, keep your clothes on.
hard to believe that's even possible. So welcome to the show tonight. We've got a lot of people over here in the chat room, which is nice. Good to have you guys here. And a big thank you to Mark Cook from Pew Report for coming out here in the middle of the damn night into the middle of Valrico.
It's only about an hour and a half drive. Not bad.
Hey, you know what? Like, you had anything better to do. Who the fuck are we kidding?
It was like 20 minutes.
Anyway, welcome to all the people tuned in out there. Tonight's going to be about catching up. Now, we got a lot of feedback last time Mark was on the show, and it was mostly positive, if you can fathom that, actually.
What do you mean? Are you telling me there was some negative feedback? You said mostly positive.
There was some negative feedback. No, there wasn't. It was all positive. God, the people love you, Mark. But speaking of that, if you guys are on Twitter, right now, there's a heated contest on 98.7 The Fan, apparently. And, Mark, can you explain what this damn contest is about between you and Scott Reynolds?
I won.
It's over?
It's over.
It's over!
Well, for now. Now, what it was a 98.7 was doing like a tournament bracket of media guys, Bucks beat writers. And somehow Scott and I only ended up in the play-in game. We weren't even in the field of 32. They're only doing 32.
So, well, and you guys are credentialed media people. I see you put that at the beginning of almost every article, so I know that's true.
It's not true.
It's almost every single article.
I have never in my life ever written a credentialed media member, ever.
Anyway, play-in game.
Believe it or not. Yeah, it was a play-in game. So, it's certainly not a scientific poll. If it's based on being a better writer, well, certainly I lose that to Reynolds. Reynolds has been doing it a long time and, you know, actually has a degree in journalism. You know, he's kind of trained in these things. So, Scott's certainly the better rider. I like to say I had a little bit of home field advantage because I did, you know, used to do nights at 98.7 and still do fill-in stuff. So a little bit of a home field advantage for me. You're a big basketball guy. Who was a college basketball coach who went and beat their mentor? You know what I mean? Larry Brown and Dean Smith, maybe. I don't know. I can't think of anybody.
It's got to have happened, right, with the tournament. Yeah.
And that's what happened in this one. It was the thing is, I really wasn't worried about it. I mean, it was good for Pew to report because, I mean, there was literally thousands of votes cast. And so that's people. But, of course, there was also people who were voting 100 times in a row, too.
You're going to have that on the votes. I wasn't actually laughing. Mark laughed because I laughed at the screen. He can't see the chat room because he is an old school journalist. He came in here with all of the old school tools of the trade, meaning a dip cup and a soda.
I didn't bring any bourbon.
Well, we got some bourbon over here if you need some.
Well, I've got it in the trunk, but okay. Go ahead.
Nice. That's Polk County representing right there, not some Rick Brown bullshit. Polk County.
Eastern Hillsboro.
That's from real Polk County. Anyway, someone in the chat room said you look like the kid from the Seminole sideline.
I'm Red Lightning. I know. I hear that all the time. I have no idea why people say that.
Just because you look identical.
I have red hair and I have a beard. Yeah. Let me just tell you something real quick. That guy's in so much better shape than me. I would run about 10 yards. Literally, I'm coaching my son's football team this spring, and I ran sprints the other day. I ran one. Literally had to just tell the kids, okay, I'll see y'all tomorrow. I couldn't breathe.
How long was the sprint, dude?
Oh, it was like a 50-yard.
Are you shitting
It was down
me?
And back one time. Oh, yeah, I'm in terror. I mean, horrible.
See, this is the thing.
Shape.
Right now, if we took a poll of the people who don't know us, they would assume you could outrun me every time.
I could outrun you speed-wise in a 40-yard dash, but if we're running distance, you win. I'll die.
And I'll take the 40-yard dash bet at some point, too.
Really?
As soon as I get my foot cold laser done next week.
I think this is a challenge.
Okay, so here's the thing. I don't do the pound your chest, I told you so shit. That's not my gimmick, right? Because all of us who do this to any capacity, even guys like me, you talk enough, eventually you're going to stumble across some shit and be right.
Sure.
Right? That said, 4 years ago, back when I actually, or was it three? I can't keep track of time. Cheryl keeps track of it normally for me. When I was still doing stuff over, before it was 98.7 The Fan, I wanted to do a morning show combine.
Right.
And I kept trying to get people involved, and people were like, nah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. What was all the rage this year? Every damn show, even the Jagoffs that don't do sports, were doing combine shows.
We're running sprints down the hallway.
Yeah, doing push-ups and goofy shit like that. So
even the sports babe did it last year.
The sports babe did
it? She literally ran a 40-yard dash in the hallway.
Wow.
In like 17 seconds or something like that. But I'm proud of her that she was able to do it, what she's been through.
Good Lord. Good Lord. Anyway, welcome to the show. Mark Cook's here. We got a big show for you tonight, guys. Last week, I was a little bit sort of deadpan. My emotions have gotten the best of me. The game is losing some of its luster. I don't know. I'm in a bad mood. Maybe it's just my period. Who knows?
You were in a bad mood last time. You were so depressed. You didn't want to talk about the off season. You were just, I don't like this team anymore. I'm burning all my jerseys.
I wasn't that bad.
You're
appreciate the hyperbole.
I'm now
a
Falcons fan.
Oh, I would never say that. God, I hate the Falcons. But all of that notwithstanding, there's a lot of really interesting things. If I didn't have my head in my ass for whatever reason it is there currently, I would be very, very excited. And that's what a lot of the listeners said last week was, listen, dude, this is really exciting shit. Now, have you had a chance to actually meet the new regime and work with them and be around One Buck and all that sort of stuff? Because the people love getting your sort of cuts from behind the scenes. It was a great experience for them.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't, I haven't had beers with anybody yet. That's not true. Here you go, Cheryl. When we were in Mobile.
Oh, shit, a Mobile story.
We had a few beers. But a lot of beers, actually, and other things. But I'm telling you, people, I'll say it again.
Go to Mobile.
Go to Mobile. It's a blast. Right. Anyway, so, but yeah, we've interacted with him somewhat, had an opportunity to talk to him. And again, we haven't hung out outside of work for the most part. But, got to meet every assistant coach, multiple times. All of the new draft picks, and I'm sorry, the new free agent signings, we've had an opportunity to talk to those guys. In fact, I put up a story today on Altron Werner. It's from last week, but there was a few cuts and quotes in there that hadn't been published yet, and I was going through my recorder and I said, hey, this might be interesting to some people. But anyway, so yeah, we've had an opportunity to talk to everybody and the new staff. I like the staff a lot. I think it's I think it's, again, I'm not here to bash the past staff, but Greg Schiano was hired late and he got the leftovers, right? I mean, he got hired January 26th. Pretty much everybody had been hired by then. This time the Buccaneers struck first with a new coach. So Lovie Smith got really his first choice of his assistants. And Lovie's reputation and success in the NFL helped him bring in a guy like Leslie Frazier. You know what I mean? Bring in a guy like Joe Cullen on the defensive line.
You know what's amazing, Mark? You just said Leslie Frazier. I have not heard his name since he was hired.
And
it's probably one of the most significant, aside from the Hardy Nickerson thing, which is an emotive thing.
Right.
Leslie Frazier is a badass coordinator.
Sure.
Right?
Sure, he is.
And no one is saying word one about him.
Right. And listen, you take Lovie Smith's defensive mindset, which came from the Tony Dungy and Monty Kiffin tree, you combine that with Leslie Frazier, this defense is going to be a better defense just based on the coaches. If they don't get anybody else, if they don't sign one more person, which they're going to, we know that, there's going to be some more people brought in. I think the roster's at 78. They'll have 90 when camp starts in July. There'll be five draft picks. A couple of those guys will be defensive guys, although we're pretty sure they're going to hit offense pretty heavy in the draft. But this is going to be, I think, a better defense. It'll be a defense that people recognize. It's going to be a lot of what we saw during the heyday. And make no mistake, that's what the Glazer family wanted when they brought Lovie Smith in. Lovie Smith, I'm not saying had Lovie Smith never been a part of the Buccaneer organization, I'm not saying he wouldn't have been the first choice, because he very well maybe would have, but I don't know that he was ever a head coach in Chicago had he not been part of that. So you really can't say, but I think the Glazer family really wanted to bring back some of the good days, because let's be honest, in the last 11 years, there hasn't been many good days. I mean, a couple playoff appearances, first-round losses. They haven't won a playoff game since the Super Bowl. So You know, I think that was part of the motive of bringing him in here. And this defense is going to be a recognizable style defense. I think it's going to be a physical defense. You've got your Warren Sapp, you've got your you know, you've got your John Lynch, and you've got your Derek Brooks in this defense right now. And that's what this defense is built on, strength up the middle. It was with Warren Sapp, with Derek Brooks, and then John Lynch. So, you know, you've kind of got those components right now in this defense, and they're going to build around and try and tool around that, I think.
Well, before we dive too deep, let's dive too deep. That defense, and we spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about, because we had Revis on the roster at the time. People are immediately saying Lovey is a Tampa 2 coach. He's a Tampa 2 coach, which is a misnomer. Tampa 2 is just a coverage. Any coach, in fact, almost all coaches implement it to a certain degree. That said, everyone has their home ground that they're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Assuming we run a larger percentage of Tampa 2 than we have in the past, does Mason Foster have the capability to do what the Mike linebacker typically does in a Tampa 2? And I don't want to lead the witness.
No, that's a great question. And that's something that Scott and I were debating. We're going to have a mock draft out tomorrow. Everybody loves mock drafts. I know you do, Derek. But
can't get enough of them.
Can't get enough. Well, don't worry. There's plenty. Just Google mock draft, and there's like 9 million hits. But anyway, what I'm saying is that something Scott and I were debating yesterday. We just don't know yet, because, and I don't think the Buccaneers know, because in Greg Schiano's defense the last 2 years, even in Raheem Morris's the last year, his last year in 2011 when Mason was a rookie, I don't know that they required him to get deep down the middle in coverage in a cover two type scheme. I don't remember seeing a whole lot of that at all last year. The linebackers tended to have the flats. If you remember, Mason had two interception returns last year. Both of those where he takes a short drop, then moves out, you know, towards the sideline. That's kind of his coverage in this defense, and he was good there. That's going to be the big question. But I asked Mason about that late last year in the locker room, and he and I were just talking, and I don't know that I even wrote the story about it. You know, I kind of say that's always been the knock. And I think it goes back to that preseason game, his rookie year against the Patriots, when he got beat for a touchdown. He also got a fine for, I forgot who
Ocho Cinco.
Yes, okay.
And Ocho Cinco offered to pay it.
Yes, he did. And, yes, there were times. And then later in that year, Darren Sproles. Now, again, he wasn't required to go deep, you know, down the middle, but he just didn't have the burst and the speed. Now, again, we're talking about Darren Sproles here. He'll make anybody look very slow, but at times it looked like Mason was kind of running in sand. But Mason talked to me about it. He says, I don't think I have a problem in coverage. He says, that's something that's motivated me to work hard, because he hears the whispers of, you know, I'm not a great coverage linebacker. He says, I'm not asked to be a good coverage linebacker. He says, I haven't had that many opportunities. And he thinks that he can do it. You know, we'll see. And in minicamp, the first time the Bucs get back together as a team, they get the early win this year because of a new coach. So April 7th, the team will be together, and this coaching staff will actually get to see guys in person. They'll put their base formation in, their base fundamental plays. They'll run some things, and they'll know pretty quick, even just in shorts and shoulder pads, if Mason Foster has the wheels to do it. And if they don't, then you can expect a linebacker to be drafted. My point is, though, they didn't address it in free agency, so I don't think that they're overly concerned at that point. Now, I don't really remember. I know it wasn't a great linebacker class. I mean, Brandon Spikes was one of the better free agent linebackers, and he's terrible
in
coverage.
He's not an upgrade.
I mean, he's a physical guy. He's an old school, you know, knock your helmet off, poke your eyes. Georgia fans remember that. So anyway, the point is, you know, there wasn't a great crop in free agency, so that may have had something to do with it too. They may be eyeballing somebody in the draft, but I don't think that they know yet, and I don't think anybody does.
It's going to be interesting to see how everything shakes out. When you bring in this many free agents, you know, and I know Calico Jack's over in the chat room right now. And
Calico Jack, who did not vote for me in the poll yesterday, who voted 100 times for Scott. Is that the same Calico Jack?
I don't know. I will ask.
There's only got to be one Calico.
No, Calico goes by a number of names. He is a man of many faces. So it may be someone else. If he voted 100 times for Scott, though, he'll own up to it. He's not someone who hides behind these things.
He's a cool dude. I don't mind.
He's a very cool dude.
Again, just for the record, I didn't care if I lost to Scott. Scott, I will say this. About 8 o'clock yesterday morning when the polls opened, I knew that it was kind of going to happen. I didn't understand what it was about. Scott immediately went on Twitter and said, vote for SR now with the link.
I saw that
tweet.
And
I said, okay, game on. If we're going to do – I was just going to let it go, and he was going to beat me handily. But, again, the home field advantage, the radio listeners that I build up, and that Twitter following, I was able to overtake him.
Calico Jack, our Calico Jack, has reported that he did not vote in any poll.
All right. Then there's another
He
Calico.
Said your poll is bullshit. He has nothing to do with it. He didn't say any of that. I made
Calico.
That
there is a Calico Jack on Twitter.
There is a Calico doppelganger, sir, that is besmirching your good name.
And who said his son also voted for Scott.
Wow, look
Does
at
Calico
that.
Jack have a son?
I don't know.
All right,
I don't
go
know.
Ahead.
At any rate, I have no idea where I was going with this when I started this conversation. We
were talking about Mason.
Mason Foster, are you bringing this many free agents? Blah, blah, blah. No idea. No clue. Anyway, real quick before we get into more questions. Oh, yeah, before we get into more questions, I want to thank our sponsors, Wing House. We will be over at Wing House for the Draft Day 3 party, because who does Draft Day 1 parties anymore, really? I mean, what the hell's the point?
Buccaneers have that market corner.
And it's absolutely terrible. It is Charles Barkley, knuckleheaded terrible, that party. It is the worst fucking event. And I don't know that I'm going this year. I went last year and was miserable the whole time. And the Buccaneers, this isn't a slight to the organization. They try, right? What happens is you get a bunch of fans who really want to see all the new guys. You've got areas that are lined off,
right.
Things that are supposed to happen, and then they try and do too much, and it last year was just a freaking joke.
But you got to admit, the Pewter Report Day 2 draft party with Josh Freeman was pretty darn awesome.
You know what's funny is your guys typically throw a pretty good party.
Right.
And we actually have talked before about doing things together, but it never happens, and so I've kind of given up the hope of those
things.
Well,
no, you know what? I'm going to say this. Hopefully Scott's not listening.
Oh, shit.
I don't know that we've got anything lined up right now for a draft day party.
Jump in with us, baby. So, we know how to do day three. We rock the shit out of day threes
that
now.
That may be something we do.
And we do it at Wing House. Just
that's
saying.
That's a pretty quality establishment.
You guys are
no,
you?
No, we don't have the
okay.
other one.
I thought you had
We
the
don't
other
have
one.
Either one of them.
Oh.
But if Wing House is listening, we would love to have you
don't
aboard.
Don't hone in on
a,
our damn sponsors,
as
you
a
son
sponsor,
of a bitch.
We will give you a heck of a deal. We will promote you for the draft day party. We will be partners with you.
Listen.
Let me just
just shut his mic off. He's a dick.
Wait. And I'll be perfectly honest. This is the honest truth. I prefer Wing House wings over the other wings.
As do I. And I certainly prefer the Wing House girls.
Depends on which location, but I will say the South Lakeland location is pretty good, and the one on Brandon Boulevard is top-notch usually.
I'll tell you what. Our home Wing House is phenomenal. We're going to be back there for the draft day party. Go out to our Facebook page and check that out. Come out and join us. We're going to be doing our peanut butter drive again, and hopefully we can get a huge amount of peanut butter like we did last time through domore.org, which is amazing. We also want to thank Buccaneer Beads and Anywhere Transportation. I was actually my first ever Gasparilla Parade because of Crew of Blackbeard's Revenge. They invited me to go on the float with them for the St. Paddy's Day Parade. Mm. I haven't stopped wearing green since.
I don't think you've changed your – I think it's the same shirt you wore Monday.
No, it's clean.
Okay.
What a great time. And we saw John and his crew go by with Buccaneer Beads. It was a phenomenal time. Big shout-out to everyone who made that happen, Daryl and the whole crew over there. Black Ops and Whiskey Willie's as well. Thanks to all you guys for doing what you do. We'll be hitting you guys up for money again soon.
Can I get a bottle of Black Ops? I keep hearing about it. And I know Jim well.
I have an extra bottle.
I need a bottle.
Yeah, I'll get you a bottle. That's fine.
All right.
At any rate, Kurt wants us to do a live show from the draft day party. So you know Kurt, Buckshot Creel, works over in radio in Orlando. Great guy, very smart Bucks fan. The challenge with a live show from our particular home Wing House is their internet connection is like a Capri Sun straw. It is one of the worst internet connections I've ever used. We used my MiFi the last time we did it. So Kurt,
by the way, Wing House, I'm not complaining about your Wi-Fi. I think it's excellent.
God, what a little
love to partner with you.
Bitch.
Go ahead, next.
Oh my God. So Kurt, we can work on some technology for that, and if we can do that, we'll make it happen.
You're only in the business, you know what I mean? You're only.
I hate having to solve everyone's problems. Hell, back in the day before they turned into an FM station, I was trying to make that damn place work, right. And now it looks like they're taking off on fire, which is great. So Buck for Life wants to have a Pewter Report, wants to become a What the Buck sponsor. He's reversing the tables.
Ouch.
On you.
Really?
Anyway,
no, because we can't wear orange jerseys and be rah-rah fans.
I know. You guys have to be impartial.
Right. Yeah, unlike our competitor who says what they are in their name, but go ahead.
Oh, my God. All right.
I'm a little grumpy tonight. I'm taking shots at anybody I can think of.
You're very grumpy. Fortunately, we don't care if anyone takes shots at us. So we're Switzerland in many ways.
And I'm totally used to it because we get shots all the time.
All the time. Uniform unveiling the 28th. For you club seat members out there, there's a uniform unveiling on the 28th. You can go to the club. They're having all sorts of drinks and stuff. You non-club members, talk to club members who like you, and they can get you in. Apparently, you can also get a first chance to buy some of the shirts as well while you're there, the jerseys.
With a 15% discount.
With a 15% discount, exactly.
$129, 15%. It's still going to be over $100.
It's still going to be some change.
Right.
Are you going to be up in the suite there, big style?
I don't know.
He's so
you
fancy.
Know what? We'll probably go. I don't know. They'll let me know if we get the invite. All I'm waiting for is the poker tournament again. That was great time last year. I think that's in the summertime for the suite holders. The poker tournament's a good time.
I would very much like to play in that if you can make that happen.
I might be able to make that happen. I was able to bring a guest last year because Reynolds never goes.
And no one likes you. Who'd you bring?
my BFF.
Who?
Spencer Robinson.
Oh, okay.
Who actually, only reason I brought him, number one, he's a huge Buccaneer fan. His dad and he have been season ticket holders forever. But he actually plays poker, and I have no idea how to play poker. No idea.
I've played a couple times.
I'm terrible.
Well, that's great. I actually bring a lot of money.
Actually, no, you don't. They give you everything.
Damn it.
It's a great thing.
All right, so let's talk more about what you've seen behind the doors of One Buck Place before Steve White calls in. He'll be calling in at 9:30. We'll ask him some questions. We'll chat with him for a little while. I keep trying to get him to come over, but it's a long haul for him.
Where does he live?
He lives way over West of Chapel area.
Oh, gosh. That's where Reynolds lives.
Yeah, it's
maybe
a long
they
haul.
Could carpool together.
They could carpool. We could have a big show over here. It'd be great. I could have Atlanta cook for everyone. We've seen sort of a purging, right? You've got a bunch of guys signed and a purging here.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is the biggest surprise removal and then the biggest surprise add, and what are your feelings about both?
Well, the Revis deal to me, it was huge because from day one, Lovie Smith said, Darrell Revis, he said in his press conference, he was directing his comment to Darrell Revis and to the people who said Darrell Revis doesn't fit in the system. I mean, he said it. We'll find a way. We don't always run cover two, he said. He said, we play plenty of man, Darrell Revis. I mean, he made that point. Jason Light said the same thing. So very, very quickly out of the gate, they seem to embrace the Darrell Revis having him on the roster. But I understand from their point of view, when they did their evaluation of this team and realized how many holes that they felt they needed to fill, they thought they could go out and sign a bunch of guys with that $16 million, and they've done that. So Darrell would be really my biggest surprise. I mean, again, I understand, but let's remember, you're arguably giving – I mean – let's take the top three quarterbacks, Manning, Breeze, and Brady, right? What if one of those three teams decided, you know, we can fill some holes if we get rid of Drew Breeze. We can sign Jimmy Graham. We can keep Lance Moore. We can keep Darren Sproles. People would lose their mind, right? Because he's the quarterback. And I understand the importance of a quarterback. There's no question about it. What I'm saying is, though, on a superstar level, on a talent level, Drew Breeze is to cornerbacks what – Darrell Revis is to cornerbacks what Drew Brees is to quarterbacks. And it just still boggles my mind a little bit that they decided to do that. Because, again, this wasn't a team that was in salary cap hell. Say what you want about Mark Dominic. And as we've seen, he structured a lot of these deals where they could free up $6 million, Davin Joseph, $7 million, Donald Penn. And they had some money to start with. So it wasn't like they weren't the Cowboys where they've got to cut players just to sign draft picks at this point.
There was a really interesting infographic one of the guys from the Seahawks put out. I'll find the link and send it over to you, where they essentially did the graphic showed under contract money, dead money, et cetera, with essentially like a scaled size. So you saw these blocks. And the Cowboys had so much dead money versus other teams that were what they called well-managed, which had teams that were under contract, and their stars all showed up where they needed to show up, and they had money for their secondary or third contract as well. And Mark Dominic, to be honest, learned that over time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And actually, I think it was NFL.com had an article today about how Jason Light's contract structures are similar.
Well, and Pat Jezinskis reported it 4 days ago. I mean, Pat is the master of finding out these deals, and he's got connections and contacts. He gets, and I don't mean, you know, looking up a website that's got a general idea. Pat knows bonus, workout clauses, every single penny, and he's usually dead on. But Pat reported that a few days ago that this team has not dished out any signing bonuses. They are still structuring contracts in the way that Dominic did. Big part of that, though, their financial guy, Greenberg, because Jason Light is not negotiating contracts. We asked him about that the other day. Again, when you see the press conference on Buccaneers.com or you listen to it on the radio, you get that. Then we get the players, the general manager, the coaches off to the side where we can talk to them about stuff. Some stuff's on the record. Some of it's off the record. But I mean, we asked Jason. I asked Jason specifically about that. And he says, you know, he's got a great team led by Greenberg, who was one of their main financial chief, you know, cap guy. Who does the specifics of the contract. Now, certainly, Lovie and Jason sign off on it, and they probably give them the parameters. Okay, we want this guy a five-year deal, you know, four-year deal, whatever it is, and we don't want to go more than this amount of money. And then, of course, the Glazers. Make no mistake, the Glazer family is very involved because they're the ones that officially write these checks. People assume that they just sit in their office or they hang out in London or wherever they are with Manchester United. No, they're involved very much in, not in the negotiations, but deciding yes and no on free agent deals, on trade deals like Revis. They had to sign off on the Revis deal. They had to sign off on cutting Josh Freeman last year.
The Revis deal is interesting to me because It comes back to when we're looking to sign him, mm-hmm. right? When you sign a cornerback for quarterback money,
right?
I mean, you sign any position sure. other than a quarterback who will
right.
touch the ball on every single right. offensive snap,
right?
You have to get tremendous benefit, and that's why I think a lot of the people who watch the games were surprised to see him in so much zone and all this stuff. And then, of course, there's some discussion about him being injured. If you bring him in and let him lock down half the field, and you can do all sorts of really cool shit on defense as a result of it, you're getting your money's worth.
Darrell Revis could not do that for a majority of the year last year. And again, plenty to hammer Greg Schiano about. Greg Schiano never buried his players in the media, ever. Greg Schiano took heat for his players when at times he shouldn't have, to the point where I said it one time, Coach, I mean, you got to save your own rear here. You know what I mean? I mean, you realize that this is going to cost you. You know what I mean? And Darrell Revis is an example of, we remember earlier in the year, question after question, I was there for those press conferences where people say, you know, Darrell Revis is playing zone. Radio guys, Darrell Revis is playing zone. And he was. Now, again, this is coming from the regime. But you know what? This comes from Darrell Revis, too, who admitted towards the end of the year that he wasn't 100% sure. healthy.
Hold on, we got Steve calling in here. Let's grab him in here. We'll jump him on. Hey, Steve, how you doing, man?
Doing good. How about you?
I'm doing great. You are on live. You got Mark Cook over on mic two. You got myself here, and we got all the fans out there. Thanks for calling in this evening. We were just talking about Darrell Revis, and Mark was cementing in that he was too injured to play, man, a large percentage of the time last year, early in the season. Is that a fair synopsis, Mark?
I would say there was, early in the season in particular, he was not 100%. And again, that plays into what you can do with the guy. And that's why I always said I would love to see him 1 year at 100%. 1 year at 100% because the guy is one of the best cornerbacks in the league. I would love to have seen what Lovie Smith and Leslie Frazier could have done with a Darrell Revis at 100%.
It would have been interesting. We're not going to get a chance to see that. What we got a chance to do was release him, get the money back, go off and build up the rest of the defense. And with Steve calling in here, what I want to do, since Steve is sort of our czar of defense, I want to get a feel from him, because last time I had Steve on the line, Steve got me so pumped up about the Bucs, and it only lasted for about 3 weeks, but still, he was so excited about the Lovie Smith hiring and all that stuff. Steve, what's your excitement level right now after the free agent
fest.
Bizarre fest? That's the word. Thank you.
Well, I'm very excited still, but I'm a little bit nervous also. Just because I understand that Lovie and the GM, Mr. Light, are trying to remake the team pretty fast, more so in Lovie's image. But at the same time, we've seen time and time again, the teams that so-called win the offseason or win free agency don't tend to do all that well in the fall. And right. So we've got so many new faces this year. For a team that, you know, we brought in a bunch of guys the last 2 years anyway. So I'm a little nervous about that. You know, how will these guys mesh? How will they get along? You know, what will be the chemistry level? We got a new quarterback. All of those things. We got some guys coming off injury. And, of course, we still don't have a number three cornerback that I don't feel comfortable with.
Right.
So I'm cautiously optimistic. But, look, I've said from the beginning, and really – it even makes it more so with all this spending they're doing and all the money they're throwing around. I really feel like the expectations should be playoffs this season. Like, you really should set our expectation level right around there, because the Panthers, we see that they've kind of been decimated.
They're moving to the wing T. You see that, right? They're not going to be able to throw the ball.
So, who are they going to throw it to? You know, Cam would be throwing it to himself or something. and the Saints have kind of remade themselves as well. They did sign the safety Bird, who I like a lot, but they've kind of gone through a remaking. So are the Falcons. Now, the Falcons, I really like some of the moves they made, because kind of like we did, they've bolstered both sides of their line. But they are huge now on the defensive line, and we're going to have to contend with that. And I'm not sure we have a starting right guard right now on the roster. So those other teams, I think, are a little bit vulnerable. And we brought in all these guys, you know, Michael Johnson, Werner, all these big-name guys. We got a new quarterback in McCown. I kind of feel like, you know, our expectation level should be pretty high right now.
Steve, I think you and I, you know, I think when the talk of Revis getting released – I think you and I were on the same page on that. I mean, we really like Revis a lot, and you get rid of the guy, and now all of a sudden cornerback becomes a huge, huge need on this football team. It was a need with Revis by having some depth there at the very least, and then you get rid of the best guy at cornerback. My whole thing is yes, you were able to take that $16 million and get some players, but you got to be right with those guys. You got to hope that they pan out. And you know, and I know in free agency, you go back to 2 years ago with Vincent, Carl, and Eric Wright. You know, two of those guys may not be on the roster. Eric Wright's already gone. Carl Nix, right. Nix may get cut. And so one out of three, that's not a very good thing. So if Jason Light's going to take that $16 million, I think people automatically expect that those guys are four great starters and four potential Pro Bowlers. You know, that's a big gamble because, again, you're getting rid of a know-what-you-have guy in Darrell Revis to get four guys that you hope pan out. Are you kind of along the same lines with that?
I'm definitely along the same lines. And it goes back to what I said. I mean, so many times we've seen people win free agency but not do so well in the offseason because chemistry issues, sometimes guys just don't work out. You know, maybe a guy gets the money and gets a little bit not as focused as he used to be, whatever it may be. And so all these guys, you're pretty much sure one of these guys, because we've signed so many, is probably going to not fulfill his contract.
Right?
So at least one of these guys won't be here for the life of their contract.
And probably so, two or three of these guys, in all honesty.
Yeah, at least one,
guys,
maybe
sure.
Two or three. I do think that we shop prudently. I like pretty much all the guys we brought in, except for O'Neal Cousins. I don't really understand that one. But the other guys I really like a lot. I think McCown, I don't think people are kind of giving McCown his credit. I watched him last year, and I know, you know, the story. He bounced around a lot of teams. He was, I think, teaching school or something like that before
school,
he finally
sure.
came back. But the guy looked good last year. And I don't know if it was Tressman or what, but he didn't look like the guy who was bouncing around all over the place. And he's mobile and he knows how to use his feet. So I really feel like, you know, people are kind of making it seem like he's maybe not that much of an upgrade. I really do think he's a clear upgrade to Mike Lynn.
I totally agree with you there. We talked to Lovey about that specifically after the McNown press conference off to the side. And what he said, and you can talk about this because you played in the league. You've seen guys who struggled for years, and then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, whether it was the work they put in, whether it just the light came on, they became good football players. And you can take a look through the history of the NFL, guys like Brad Johnson, who was a pretty good quarterback but won a Super Bowl with the Buccaneers after the age 30. Jim Plunkett with the Raiders, remember him winning
from
a Super
Patriots.
Bowl? I mean, how many years did he struggle as a mediocre quarterback at best? Rich Gannon is another example of a guy who bloomed late. And I'm not saying Josh McCown is any of those three guys, but Lovie Smith thinks he's one
and
of those three
guys. And you didn't mention Kurt Warner, who was bagging groceries.
That's absolutely
right.
And really, I
see a lot of Gannon in McCown because one of the things that Gannon learned to do was actually use his athletic ability when he got older.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he was a guy kind of like McCown that might try to rely too much on his arm strength, trying to, you know, get the ball in there in tight spaces when he didn't necessarily need to. Go ahead and take off and make some yards with your legs, get down, you know, protect yourself.
Right.
But you don't have to try to make a spectacular throw every time. And I've heard McCown kind of say that same thing in interviews since he's been signed. That I know on one interview, he said the number one thing he learned from Lovey was protect the football. And I love to hear that from our quarterback. Because, listen, we'd all love to have Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, but if you don't have that, you need a guy who's very smart,
mm-hmm.
makes good decisions, isn't afraid of the moment, isn't afraid to make the big throw, but understanding that, hey, if it's first down, go ahead and throw it away or take off running or even take the sack and let him play another down. So I love everything I've heard from him. I love everything I saw from him last year when he took over for the Bears for, you know, that run with, I think, 13 touchdowns and one interception.
Right.
I just see a clear upgrade when I watch this guy play. And, of course, he's a veteran anyway, so you kind of expect that. But I don't really get – you know, the people who are a little bit upset because Levy said he's going to be the starting quarterback, I really feel like he's a clear upgrade.
Well, I think a lot of people, and this happens with quarterback, it happens with all positions, but quarterback specifically, you have the supporter of the incumbent and the supporter of the new guy. The most popular guy is always the backup quarterback. Then when the backup becomes the quarterback, whoever was their supporter now follows them along. And you're going to have those things. I think a lot of people also want to root for the young kid who did the best he could do last year, was considered one of the best rookie quarterbacks last year. Despite Bucks fans who watched him a lot, there's a lot of, I think, liabilities in Mike's game. I was concerned with what I believe Tedford does on offense with Mike's athletic ability. But we don't know what offense Tedford's actually going to run here. I mean, we just know what he's done in the past. I mean, hell, he could come in here and do something totally different than he's ever done. When I saw Josh come in, though, McCown, I thought, okay, this is a guy that more fits what I would expect. What it does, however, is set up, who the hell's number two? Because the styles, in my opinion, are so different between one and two right now. Your offense, if it actually caters to the skill set, you don't run that same offense with Mike Glennon.
They're drafting a quarterback. They are absolutely drafting a quarterback, and that's your number two. And Glennon could be on the trade block. He may be number three. I don't know. But they're drafting a quarterback for the future. You can't sign a guy who, and again, he's 34. He'll be 35 when the season starts. Now, granted, his body is that of a 28, 29-year-old because he hasn't taken a lot of hits with only 38 career starts. But at the same time, you can't count on this guy to play for 10 years. You've got to find that quarterback. And I think they're going to be looking. And Jason said it actually on the station, Steve, that you know, they're looking. They think there's some franchise quarterbacks out there, and he said it on Mark Ryan's show the other night, but it may not be a guy that everybody's thinking of, meaning the three guys, the Bridgewater, the Bortles, and the Manziels. It could be a Mettenberger. I mean, it could be a Derek Carr. We don't know, but they've got their eye on somebody right now.
As long as TPD is around, Mettenberger's okay. Derek Carr is the one everyone seems to be kind of gravitating towards, but I haven't watched the reviews of him enough to know whether I give a shit. But that's actually one of the questions I want to ask both of our esteemed folks here. We got Mark Cook in studio. We got Steve White. Steve, we got one of your pictures up in the video here because I know you don't like Skyping in here. We got a picture of you, and I drew a funny face and a mustache. No, I didn't. It's just a normal picture. But we're at number seven. The mock draft before pretty much had the big three quarterbacks going, 1, 2, 3, or some variety between the top five. They were going to be gone long before we could even smell them. The latest versions seem to imply we may actually get a shot at these guys. Mm-hmm. So my question for you, and I'll go to Mark first since he's directly across from me. We wake up at number seven, and all three of the big three are there. Who do you take and why? And you can say none of those three, by the way.
I'm going to say none of those three. And I think Steve may agree on this. I think you look at the free agency, what they've done in free agency, and only having five draft picks in a very, very deep draft, one of the better drafts that people are saying probably in the last 15 years, I really think if there's one of those three guys available, there'll be somebody behind him willing to give up the farm to go get a Manziel, a Bortles, or a Bridgewater. And I think it would be tough for Jason Light, having only five picks in this draft, not to be able to do that. Because, again, if they do, if he's being honest, they have their eye on a quarterback later on, they don't need to make that selection at number seven. I think they're sitting in a beautiful spot to be at. So I don't think they take any of those three.
What about you, Steve?
Yeah, the only guy who excites me at seven is Teddy Bridgewater. And I don't really give a shit that he didn't throw perfectly the other day in shorts in the indoor stadium at Louisville.
Right.
I've seen this guy really over the course of his whole career, but definitely the last two seasons, make all the throws and a lot of times in the tight windows. And his timing on the routes, the timing of his footwork, everything tells me that this kid is NFL ready. There are no sure things when it comes to drafting a quarterback, especially drafting one at seven so high in the draft. But I'm just telling you, this kid, people say it's a deep draft and stuff like that. Look, I don't see the same thing out of Bortles or Manziel when I see Teddy Bridgewater. And obviously those guys have their own high points as well. Manziel is one of the most shifty and hard to tackle quarterbacks I've seen in college football in a long time. But at the same time, you know, his offense was so, I mean, it's literally called air raid offense.
Right.
So there's so little structure to it a lot of times as far as hanging in the pocket, letting guys get open. Because he has some pretty good receivers. He just take off. And with Teddy, you didn't see that. You see a guy who's really been in a NFL pro type system, has had to go through his reads, look off safeties, do all the little things, have good footwork, be under the center and take snaps from center, take it out of shotgun, timing routes, deep routes, the whole shebang. So if Teddy Bridgewater is there, I'm going to say go ahead and get him. As a matter of fact, I said earlier this offseason, if there was one guy that I would actually try to trade up and get, it would be Teddy. Now, if he's gone, then I'm definitely open to trading back, because obviously we lost a draft pick with the whole Revis situation, and we only have five. Right now, we have probably more than five holes when you count depth.
Right.
We need depth at linebacker. We need depth on the offensive line. We need a third wide receiver.
Depth at the offensive line. That's cute when you say that.
So you trade back, and hopefully somebody is stupid enough to want Manziel or Bortles so bad that they're willing to give up the farm. But we definitely, if there's a way for us to pick up another, you know, two or three picks in the top three rounds, by moving back, I say by all means do it.
Now, Mark, you wanted to say something? Mark?
Yeah, Steve, you make a great point about Bridgewater. Now, I'll say this. The previous regime, they weren't keen on Bridgewater. They thought his body frame was a little slight, and he did come in weighing a little bit less than they thought. Of course, he's been working out at IMG. I think he weighed in like at 208 or something like that the other day. The new regime, I don't know what their thoughts are on Bridgewater, and it doesn't matter what the past thought, but they may have the same feelings about, you know, that's his only drawback. But as far as being the most NFL-ready, when you watch Teddy Bridgewater, Steve's exactly right. He goes through his progressions. He hangs in the pocket. And talking to former players, talking to NFL executives, head coaches, scouts over the last year, talking about quarterbacks specifically, their number one thing is it doesn't matter how athletic you are as a quarterback. If you can't throw from the pocket, you won't be successful in the NFL. And I think we saw last year Cam Newton improved that considerably. He's still not there yet. Colin Kaepernick struggled at times. But the guy, the young guy, when you talk about the athletic guys, the one who was the best was Russell Wilson, and guess what he did? He won a Super Bowl. So, but Bridgewater, to me, reminds me a lot. He may not – Russell can get outside and throw darts, just darts, you know, on the move. I don't know if Bridgewater's that good yet, but I think he's very good in the pocket. And I think, you know, he's the most NFL-ready guy also, certainly.
All the reports seem to say he's extremely cerebral. He spends a lot of time on film study. I see him, because of his height, choosing lanes to throw the ball through. I don't want to make a comparison to Drew Brees, but when I look at his physical attributes, they're similar. And he when you talked about anticipation of routes, a lot of the things I think that go into a solid quarterback, it goes into a solid receiver too, is knowing the defense. You got to know where the weakness is. You got to be on the same page with your quarterback. And having that ability to tie back is really, really important. Now, assuming we don't get Teddy B and we trade back and all that sort of thing, we've brought a lot of new people in here. Steve made the comment about depth at offensive line. I said it was cute because I think we don't have five yet. What do you see as the biggest risk facing the Bucs right now going into the draft, the biggest gaping hole that we have to address either through draft or free agency? And I'll go to Steve first. I'll come back to Mark.
It's obviously the right guard, I would say. I think we're at least solid pretty much everywhere else. We have Jamon Meredith. We did re-sign him, and so people shouldn't forget about that. But I'm just not sure what we're going to do. We signed Dietrich Smith. And we already have Zuta. So we got two centers. One of them's probably going to have to play guard. Well, I've seen Zuta at guard. I don't want to see Zuta at guard ever again. I've not seen Dietrich Smith at guard, but...
But he has played guard, but you're right, I haven't seen it. But, yes, he can play guard, but
right.
That's certainly not his natural position.
I mean, people say they can, but, I mean, you've been playing center, so right. I can go off center. That doesn't always translate to guard. And so I'm still worried about right guard because why? We don't even know about our left guard. He's kind of been kept under wraps right now. I have a feeling at some point in the offseason they're going to do like an unveiling of him or something, you know, Knicks 2.0 or something, because we just get these random reports about how his toe is doing. But
with
we don't
a bionic
know,
foot.
Is he running full speed? Is he able to, you know, make cuts and pull and stuff like that? Stuff that's going to be really, really put a lot of pressure on that big toe. You know, coming off the ball, low and hard, and stuff like that. So, if you're not even sure about your left guard, you're sure that your starting right guard from last year is gone. I just feel very uneasy about our guard situation right now, specifically right guard.
Even beyond the people, the roster, and then Mark, I'll get you your answer on this. It seems as though they're restructuring, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, guys. We had guys that were maulers, mashers, power man kind of guys. It looks like we're going more towards a style that's more of a zone scheme. We tried that before back in the ill-fated Jeff Jagodzinski era, which lasted almost as long as Mark's beard is going to. What are your thoughts about that? And let me get Mark's answer on the biggest hole, and then we'll go back, because I know, Steve, you'll probably have some feedback on that.
You know, I'm with Steve on the offensive line. I mean, Jeff Tedford talked about being a physical running football team. Of course, you know what? I don't know a coach. Even Mike Martz used to say that, right? He wasn't going to run the damn football, but he would say it. We're going to run the football.
We're going to be physical with Marshall Faulk.
Right. I mean,
we have a flag football team. We're going to be physical as shit. Torrey Holt's going to bowl over some bitches.
Every coach says it. Now, will it transpire? It doesn't matter. You've still – look, the Saints 2 years ago when they set the records in offense, they were also second in the league in rushing that year. I mean, people forget when Drew Brees threw 50 touchdowns or whatever it was, they also ran for, you know, over 2,000 yards. So you got to be somewhat balanced if you're going to win a Super Bowl. But and I think we saw that last year with Seattle in particular and Baltimore the year before. But, you know, the offensive line is scares me. We've got our mock out tomorrow. We do have the Buccaneers addressing it in the second round, with the first pick in the second round. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But
not even going to tease with who it is. Not going to give anyone a glimpse.
You got to go to Pewter Report. I'll write it down for you, and I'll text it to Steve later. But because I know Steve's just dying to know who our mock draft is. But
I want Debo, the one he wrote about today. I don't give a damn where we're going to get him. If he's going to take people's lunch money, I want that bitch in Pewter.
I'm with you on that. Hey, look, let me be a little different than Steve because he's already addressed this. I think 1A and 1B, 1A and 1B being the receiver position also. I'm really concerned about the receiver position. Now, I think it's very difficult to get rid of Mike Williams, but we do know that the previous administration was not happy with him, and certainly this administration has come out publicly and said he's got to straighten up and get serious about what he's doing. But you know, you're gonna kill yourself, you know, money wise if you get rid of the guy. So fingers crossed, Mike Williams comes back. Look, Vincent Jackson, love the guy, consummate professional, a leader inside that locker room, not with the media, but inside the locker room. With his guys in the building, he does a great job. He's a coach's dream player, but he's getting older. And we saw last year some things that happen with receivers, dropping balls, getting chased down, you know, at the goal line a couple times. You know, one that was 2 years ago against New Orleans, and then this year against Carolina. On the next play, Glennon fumbles the football, and that game's over at that point. So, you know, they're going to have to upgrade. This guy's going to be due over $9 million this year, or I don't know about this year, but next year. So I think they're going to be looking certainly at the receiver position. And even if Williams is back, which he probably will be, and even if Vincent Jackson returns back to form like he did in 2012, better than last year, which wasn't a bad year by any stretch, but they've got to figure out what they're going to do as that number three receiver, because right now you've got Russell Shepard, Chris Owusu, and Tommy Streeter on the roster, Eric Page and Sky Dawson. I mean, none of these guys excite anybody when you talk about being a third receiver, and whether it be a slot. Now, look, the Buccaneers under Greg Schiano and Mike Sullivan, all three receivers played all three spots. It wasn't like they just were strictly a slot. One was X, one was Y. They all kind of interchanged. We saw Vincent in the slot quite a bit. They based it on matchups, and most teams do that today. I mean, they look at the matchup and they try and find, you know, try and find a weakness in the defense, and they'll put the receiver there. But the bottom line is they've got two starting caliber wide receivers on this roster right now, in my opinion. Maybe one of these young guys, and you pointed this out the other day, Steve, to me on Twitter, you know, maybe so's don't count. You know what I mean? Hope. It doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? I need to see production, and that's the way I feel about the receiver position. They've got to upgrade the receiver position. Again, Tedford talked about speed and space. I don't know where the speed is on this football team offensively, because Vincent Jackson and Mike Williams are not burners. They're not going to take a 5-yard slant and go 90 yards. You know, maybe that's an Eric Page, maybe that's a Dawson, but they didn't really step up last year at all.
They have to catch it first.
They got to catch it. They got to be on the field.
And Owusu is one more concussion away from a bad movie.
No, there's no question about it. I mean, Chris has got that issue with the concussion problem.
He's clocked fast, and he's a guy who looked good in training camp last year, but it's like practice players and game players. Right. He couldn't put it all together. Sky Dawson, I have no idea how he's still on the roster. Eric Page, you know, special teams guy, looks like he could be something. But I agree, and a lot of the people in the chat room were asking this question, so I'm really glad you transitioned over to it. How important is that number three position? And you say we've got two starting calibers. I think talent-wise, you're right. We've got two starting calibers. But talent plus head as an asset, when I look at the business side, we got 1.5, because I don't know which Mike Williams I'm going to get. Sure. When the guy plays football, I love watching him play. He's the kind of receiver you want. You can throw the ball up in there. He's going to grab it. He's going to get in there and fight for it. I just don't know that he gives a shit, and that scares me.
Well, and that's the concern with the organization. Look, Mike Williams is a Sunday game baller. I mean, Steve, you played with guys at Tennessee. You played with guys probably even with the Buccaneers, although Tony Dungy wouldn't have put up with it, or whoever was the coach at the time during your tenure. that just, you know, they're lazy during the week. And I'm not saying Mike Williams is lazy, but they don't put 100% into the work. But they show up on Sundays. And there are some guys that can get away with that. But eventually it wears thin on an organization. Not just the organization, and Steve can say this too, probably to the other players in the locker room who are working their asses off on a daily basis and in the off season. And then, you know, you see a guy, and I'm not saying, you know, I don't know what Mike does. I don't know what his work ethic is when he's in the building. I don't think it's bad. But his focus certainly has been on other things other than just football. And that's not the worst thing. I mean, these guys deserve an outlet. I mean, you know, not everybody is going to be consumed with football 24/7 like Greg Schiano was. And that's what he wanted. He wanted a roster full of robots like himself that was consumed with nothing but football. That's why he loved Mike Glennon so much, because Mike Glennon is Greg Schiano without being a jerk. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just the facts. I mean, he didn't care about golf. He didn't care about chasing tail. He cared about football. And there's something to be said for that. Mike Williams maybe not, isn't that guy. And so I agree with you that there's 1.5 at this point. They've got to upgrade that receiver position. And I will say in our mock, that the number one pick, we have him at 7, is taking a receiver.
You going after Watkins there?
Well, yeah. But I don't think he's going to be there. But, you know, it's a possibility that he could be there.
Yeah, that's a very popular pick right now. It's going to be interesting to see. He's a physical specimen, certainly. Now, let's transition again. And you guys in the chat room.
Well, you going to let me talk about it?
Yeah.
I thought you already talked about it. My bad. I was going back to the offensive line.
I kind of brought up a couple things. I want to get his opinion as a former player on that.
Like, I'm going to stop you from talking, Steve. Who are you talking to?
The whole thing about Mike Williams, it just baffles my mind. Just to be quite honest with you, because I haven't seen the off-field stuff filter into him on tape. You know, we know he was hurt for most of this year trying to fight through that hamstring. The problem with that, really, and why I kind of didn't understand at all why they tried to put him out there with a bad hamstring, is Mike Williams has never been a burner. He's never been a fast guy. He's a guy who can get down the field and you can throw it up to him, he'll go up and make the catch. But if he's even slower because he slowed down by a hamstring, he's almost he might as well not even be out there. And so I didn't think that was very smart from the get-go to keep running him out there. And then finally, I guess it just was so bad that he couldn't go at all anymore.
Steve, they were desperate. Let me just say it. Let's be honest. This organization, Mark Dominic and Greg Schiano, were desperate. That's the reason Doug Martin didn't go on IR till late in the year. They were praying that somehow he would get better.
The desperation moves, you know, almost by definition, a lot of times get you in even more trouble.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because it, no matter how desperate you are, if you're putting this guy out there and he can't get open, you're playing with 4 eligible receivers instead of 5. And so you can be desperate all you want to, but you got to understand the law of diminishing returns. But to the point about his on-field stuff, you know, if he'd never gotten arrested or had anything happen to him, I'd have never known. Because sometimes you watch a guy on the field and you suspect maybe they're dogging it. And before we knew about the hamstring injury, I was kind of wondering what was going on with him, because he was moving so slow down the field. He always looked slow running anyway.
Right.
But he looked like, I mean, molasses at certain points of the season. So, you know, find out about the hamstring and stuff like that, to me, you got to take your hat off to him for even being out there in the first place, because he was still trying to block.
I agree.
He was still trying to get open. He just wasn't very effective.
Right.
So for me, you know, we talk about, you know, Lovey and Tony and stuff like that. Just to be honest with you, they didn't police guys off the field like that. As long as you came in and did your work.
Right.
If you're on time, you got your work in, you performed, nobody was, like, chasing you out in the streets to see, oh, this guy's out in the club all the time. This is kind of one of those things where, especially with social media, you know so much more about players nowadays that you didn't before. Like, maybe you were running the streets back then, but you didn't have pictures of you running the streets on Instagram.
Right.
So everybody knew you was out running the streets.
But Steve, so doesn't that speak to...
I think that's one of those things where I don't necessarily think... I don't know. I don't know if he's on his last leg with Lovey and all them. I'm sure they don't like all the negative attention after they just got here and got, you know, in place and just got where they were going to start. Looking at free agents, looking at the draft, and then all these articles are coming out about him doing these other things other than football. not necessarily anything criminal, just kind of like, you know, he's doing too much. So I kind of feel like, first of all, he should have been went and met with them. I think that was a big mistake. As a matter of fact, and I said this on Twitter, I think any guy who was maybe on shaky ground with the last regime should have went in the first day and
Absolutely.
Introduced themselves to Lovey. That's
Absolutely.
How you try to get off to a fresh start. And from everything I've heard, they've not even really met with him yet, which I don't understand. But I feel like this. If he doesn't get in any legal trouble, if he still comes in and put in the work, I still see a bright future for Mike Williams. I you know, this whole rap group stuff, I hope there's just a function of him still being kind of young and getting paid, and it's a maturation process, and maybe somebody pulls him to the side and say, hey, you can't be doing this shit because it reflects negatively on you, even if you aren't doing anything bad. And guys have to understand that. When you're under that kind of microscope and people start looking at your contract numbers and, hey, maybe this guy isn't worth all this money, you have to at least give the appearance that, you know, you matured, you put all this stuff behind you, you refocus now, and you're ready to get back out there and turn this whole thing around. So the Mike Williams situation, I think it's got a lot more to be written about Mike Williams. I hope that he isn't on his last leg with the new regime, because I see a lot of potential in the kid. I just think he was hurt this year. Nobody was ever complaining about his contract basically until the end of the year when he just, you know, couldn't get healthy, had to go on IR, and then people started kind of complaining about him. But I didn't hear these complaints, you know, earlier on in the season when he actually was producing. So now, do we still need a receiver? Obviously. Now, here's the thing. Probably the deepest position in this draft is wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You're probably able to find a guy who can come in and play that number three role right away in the third round. So that's why I'm not really that concerned about that position, because no matter what we do, and we missed out on some guys in free agency, but no matter what we do, we still should be able to find a quality wide receiver in the third round. And obviously we get our third round pick now back from the Jets and give up our fourth because of the Revis deal.
Right. No, and I think you're right. There's no question. I mean, this is a very deep draft. And when we were doing our mock yesterday, we spent a couple hours, you know, going through the list of all the players. And there was a lot of talent. There were guys, Steve, that will be drafted in the fourth and fifth round that would have been second rounders in last year's draft. That's how talented this group of wide receivers are. And there will be guys. The one thing the Buccaneers, I think, have to look at with a receiver is you can't draft a guy as a number three guy and think, okay, this is our number three guy for 10 years. I think that they're going to be looking at a guy that, yes, will come in and play that number three role, but eventually can evolve into that number one role, because Vincent is, you know, going to be due almost $10 million next year. You know, in the Mike Williams situation, who knows? So they know that eventually they're going to have to find that number one. That's why we kind of went with a receiver at the number one position, a guy that can come in, doesn't have to be a superstar right off the bat, because Vincent and Mike are here, but can turn into that number one receiver down the road, whether it's Mike Evans, whether it's a Kelvin Benjamin in the second round, whether it's, you know, the Cooks kid. I mean, there's a ton of receivers in this thing. Steve, one thing I wanted to point out that I completely agree with you on, when you talked about all of these players should be, the first thing they should have done is went and made an impression on their head coach. I mean, you know this, being in the business world, Derek, you know this. When a new person comes in, a new boss, a new CEO, you want to be on your best behavior. You know what I mean? You want them to notice you're there, you're working hard. Now, granted, they can't really be in the facility working out on the field, but I think right. they can be in the weight room. But they can go and meet with the coach. They can say hi. They can introduce themselves. I tweeted a play, and I'll show you this afterwards. I was on Twitter with a player, okay? Recently, the Buccaneers lost a player. I'm not going to say who it is, but they lost a player. They have a guy on the roster who now becomes that number one guy in a sense. And I asked the guy what he's been up to. He says, just hanging out. I was like, well, have you talked to the coach? What have the coaches told you? He says, nothing. I haven't talked to him. And I'm like, what are you doing? You're a young player. And to me, it's wide open. I mean, here's a chance for this guy to potentially be a starter. I mean, not just a role player as he was last year. And in fact, last year he didn't even didn't even play. But you know, this is a guy who, in my opinion, should be doing exactly what Steve's doing. I want to be anywhere I can be around this offensive coaching staff to show them what I can do, or the defensive staff, because if I say offense, then you'll know who I'm talking about. But, yeah, I mean, I completely agree. Mike Williams, if he hasn't already, the first thing he should have done, especially when that article came out from the Times, even the one that we wrote earlier, I mean, I would be going to the coaching staff and having one of those come-to-Jesus meetings.
This speaks to what I think a lot of fans have gotten to. With more information, as Steve mentioned, social media, we're learning – We're seeing more windows into the person they are. I mean, I remember seeing the picture. I can't remember which team it was from the 60s. Quarterback sitting there with a cigarette in his mouth, right?
Yeah.
That's the way it used to be. You never saw
anything. I think
anything
that was Len Dawson.
It was Len Dawson drinking a
cigarette at halftime.
Exactly, yeah. Right? But no one knew any of that shit, and no one cared. Now, because of social media, because of the way players manage their own, right? And this is where I've always said, listen, if you're a guy getting paid, have someone on your roster who you trust. You got to have that guy you trust who you know, and you give them carte blanche to come to you. Hey, listen, you're being a shithead.
Right.
We're done with this. Right. I'm taking over your Instagram. I'm taking over your Twitter.
Right.
I don't care that you do all this crazy stuff. I don't care that you rap. I don't care any of that stuff. Just let's be smart businessmen. You got that contract. Let's go do those things. Let's manage your career. And when you see guys out there managing their career as well as playing great ball, they always percolate to the top because people, you just inherit, even the people who don't focus on that, you just kind of know, oh, well, they kind of get their shit together. You don't know why. You just know they do. And I hope Mike does. You know, I really do. I don't care. Like I said before, I think his rap sucks. But I think I love him when he plays receiver the way he can.
Sure.
And for the team that I love, I hope he plays really, really well.
My thing that bothers me most about the Mike Williams deal is, to me, it's not like TMZ's taking these pictures. He's putting it out there on a daily basis at 3 and 4 in the morning, posting these Instagram videos of him at Club Kennedy or wherever he may be at. I question the guy's judgment. Yes, social media is there and it makes you more exposed, but you can't throw it out there. I mean, if you're going to do these things, which, trust me, there are plenty of people in this league that do stuff we have no idea what they do behind closed doors, and that's their business. That's fine. But they don't throw it out there on social media. I question his judgment a little bit in that situation.
It sucks because he invites it himself. And I hope it's just, like, I think Steve, you used the word immaturity. Hopefully he'll get through that. Hopefully he's got people in his life that he trusts who will get that thing square. Because it's not like he's doing anything bad. Like, even the article that he had, if you go look at the details of that article, he paid everything that was owed. Right. He handled everything, right? At the end of the day, if you read that whole damn article, shit happened, shit got crazy, he addressed it.
Well, the thing about that article, really, if you think back on it too, is that when he was supposedly having all these wild parties and everything was 2012, which is actually when he played well.
Right.
And that's what I mean is, you know, I'm not necessarily against guys putting stuff on their Instagram. You just got to understand what the situation is. If you're a guy in good standing and nobody has any question marks about you, you can do pretty much
anything you want.
Right.
I remember 2 or 3 years, maybe 2 years ago, when Gerald McCoy, people were kind of wondering if he was going to pan out. Maybe he was a bust because he kept getting hurt. And he was putting all this stuff on his Instagram. He caught a lot of flack for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy does the exact same thing now, and really nobody complains. You wonder why? Because he's out there kicking people's ass on Sunday and making Pro Bowls.
Right.
You do that, you stay off with, you know, stay out of trouble off the field, nobody's going to give you any flack. But once you start getting in any kind of trouble, whatever it is, you got, you know, stories floating out there about you. Now is when you got to understand the situation. You can't try to show everybody that you don't care, because you do care, because you want to keep playing and you want to keep making money. So you got to at least pull back and change their perception. You can go out. I've seen dudes go out all the time, go out there on Sunday and just be a maniac. We all know the story of Lawrence Taylor. This dude was out there high, second quarterbacks, right? But at the same time, nobody knew that back then. Now, you know, if you have a bad game, you posted all week about parties and shit, people are going to feel like that's why you had a bad game.
Yeah.
Or that's why you pulled your hamstring. And you got to be smart enough to say, hey, I know how to play this game. I'm going to pull back from Instagram. I'm going to pull back from Twitter and Facebook and all that shit. I'm still going to go out because I'm a young guy, but I don't have to let everybody know what the hell I'm doing. So, again, that's the maturity that I was talking about. Be mature enough to know that, look, you don't have to impress all these people. Right now, you're in jeopardy of losing your job and losing all that money that allows you to do all these things that you put on Instagram in the first damn place. So pull back and try to change the outside perception of you. Because that plays a key. It's going to play a role. You know, it's sad to say this, but like I said, as far as I know of, he hasn't been in any criminal trouble since he's been a Buccaneer, but I bet you can't convince some people of it. Some people are sure right now, this dude's a bad guy just because all the stuff that's come down. And like Mark said, he hasn't changed any of his habits. He's still doing the same shit that was in all these articles in the first place.
And I'll say that because we follow most of the players on Instagram and Twitter and things like that. And I think he has reined it in a little bit. In fact, about 2 weeks ago, he tweeted a picture of the Make-A-Wish girl. You know what I mean? And I tweeted, you know, these are the headlines that the Buccaneer fans want to see. These are the Instagram pictures. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he doesn't like us right now. And I understand that. But and we have no ill will towards the guy. We don't have an axe to grind. We love talking to Mike Williams in the locker room. I mean, he is a happy, funny, good dude in the locker room. There's no question about it. But we do know, and take it with a grain of salt, whether you believe the previous regime or not, but they claimed, and we wrote it, that Mike had amassed $200,000 in fines. Over $200,000 in fines for missed meetings, being late to practices, rehab assignments, you know, over the course of the last couple years.
What was the average on the team?
What do you mean?
So this is it's a data point. That's a really interesting data point to me.
Right.
But when I hear those data points, what I'd love to know is across the entire team, what was the average in fine accumulation?
I don't know but I'll tell you this, and Steve will tell you this. But almost every player has gotten a fine for something.
Sure.
I mean, and Greg Schiano was notorious for handing out fines. I mean, make no mistake about it. Very few players don't get fines. I think Booger said John Lynch got fined. I mean, Derek Brooks accumulated
a couple
Conimo's
fines. Andrew Connemo's never going to fine.
That's true. But I mean, everybody gets fined. But part of it was, you know, kind of a pattern over a length of time.
Sure.
I don't think anybody's accumulated that much. And again, people can believe, and again, it's coming from the previous regime. They were making a point. But we believe, you know, we believe that figure was pretty accurate.
Well, here's my thing about that. And maybe he amassed $200,000 worth of fines. I find it hard to believe, just from the simple fact that there's a maximum on how much you can fine guys for certain things.
Right.
And basically, off the field stuff, being late and stuff like that, there's usually a fine, a maximum fine amount.
It's around $9,800 is the maximum amount for general violations of missing meetings, rehabs, things like
that. And so you got to miss so many meetings.
Right.
Now here's why I don't really believe it. You would have had to miss so many meetings without this regime ever suspending you to end up with a $200,000 figure.
Mm-hmm. 20.4.
Now, let's think about the assholes who we just ran out of town. Does that really sound like the kind of shit that they're going to do? Like, to me, and I don't give a damn how much we paying Mike Williams, Greg Schiano does not strike me as the kind of person that's going to let a guy get fined 20 times and let him keep playing football,
right,
or at least not let the shit get out purposely to let everybody know, hey, this dude isn't doing anything we're asking him to do right now. Because literally, 20 times? I mean, God, come on now.
But Steve, look at that over the course of...
Schiano men, all these other stuff, you know,
right,
marching orders, and I said the temperature control on the facility, and you're letting a dude show up, you know, even if it wasn't 20, 10 times. 10 times late, or, you know, sleeping meetings and shit like that. That doesn't sound to me logical. And I'm not saying that, you know, y'all are wrong in running the story. I'm just trying to think through this.
Right.
Where a guy amassed that many fines in a regime, those guys who we know were assholes, never did anything about it.
And Steve, I'll be honest. When I heard the number figure, I thought, that can't be the case. He had to have said that wrong. But he confirmed it with somebody in the building and said, that's right? And the person said, yeah. I was like, whoa. I mean, our jaws dropped. We couldn't believe that either. Because, again, part of what you said, but here's part of the deal, too, in our story. Part of the whole story was that had this regime survived, then Mike Williams was definitely on the hot seat because of the fact that they were frustrated with that. problem is he's the number two receiver. Again, I'm not saying it's right, but, you know, how are you going to get rid of this guy? I think that's why they ran the guy out there so much last year, because what's your alternative? Literally, Eric Page or Sky Dawson. A one-legged Mike Williams
I'm
going to
ban Sky Dawson. I'm banning Sky Dawson discussion for the rest of this show.
No more Sky Dawson.
Right, but what I'm saying is, if that is the case, these were the biggest fucking hypocrites we have ever seen in Tampa Bay.
But it's NFL coaching.
Honest.
You know that
if
coaches
they're running him
want
out
to
there,
win.
They're running a guy out there who is not a quote-unquote Buccaneer man week after week after week. That flies in the face of everything they said about how they were trying to build
Buccaneer men. I agree. I completely agree with you there. But look, Steve, I mean, you've seen Varsity Blues. I mean, Coach Bud Kilmer, you know, wanted Billy Bob to go out there and play with a concussion.
But he's not Bud Kilmer.
I know, I'm just joking.
Hey, his cat's okay.
I'm just saying, football, I mean, it is. Look,
they scanned his cat.
Steve, I coach my son's 12 and 13-year-old kids. Do you know that this is how competitive it is in silly, stupid coaches league? I got kicked out of the game for arguing with an official. Now, in hindsight, I realize how stupid am I? Because what does it matter if we win, if we lose, if it's a bad call or not a call? But people get so, and I'm guilty of this, you get so competitive. I can only imagine what an NFL coach, the pressure they have is in the discussions that go on. This guy's a knucklehead, but what are we going to do if we don't play the guy? We got a standard, but the standard's going to end up getting my ass fired. That's the problem, you know what I mean? So,
well, yeah, but, I mean, you go back. Like I said, I've heard this Buccaneer man shit over the last 2 years enough to just make me sick, especially when we passed on guys that I knew were good players, and then they threw out this moniker to describe why they didn't pick that guy. Oh, he wasn't a captain on his college team. Oh, he wasn't a Buccaneer man. You know, he's doing other stuff. And then you going out there and playing a guy that's got fined so many times that the figure got up to $200,000.
And Steve,
that's the height of hypocrisy when you're talking about, you know, we're going to do this the right way. You know, and basically that was the selling point they was giving us, is that, hey, we'd rather lose with Buccaneer men than win with a bunch of, you know, thugs or whatever.
And
now you're running a guy out there that's getting fined up to $200,000.
And not only that, Steve, you say hand the guy $40 million extension. I mean, you redo
right,
his contract,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
So
that was the shock. That was a big shocking thing to me, is like, if the guy's been doing all of this, what in the world are you doing, you know, writing a check that big? You know, and the Glazers, I mean, they had to be like, are you kidding me?
All right. So we've beaten up Mike Williams and the Mike Williams topic
for the record,
quite some time.
Let's just say it. Steve, Derek, Mark, we like Mike Williams. If the Caveman Gang is listening, we like Mike Williams.
Oh, my God.
I'm not going to any of his rap shows, but
Steve, I wish you could be here to laugh at Mark pandering like this.
Oh, I'm not pandering. I just don't want to get, you know, I just don't want Mike to chase
me down. Are you trying to
imply
that Mike would chase you down?
No, I don't think he'd chase me. He can. He's got a bad hamstring.
Oh, I'm sure his hamstring's fine. Let me see. In case you guys wondered, we got a little Caveman Gang.
I really didn't wonder. So you ain't even got to tell me or let me know how he sound rapping ever. Like, I've avoided it. I've avoided all the links and all that. So, no, thank you. No, thank you.
You know, Steve, when this show is over, Old School and I are going to take our shirts off and dance to this.
That's the most disturbing fucking thing I've ever heard.
We're going to do it live on the cam, so people hang around after the show. No,
I think I speak for the chat room when I say, please don't do that.
God damn it! See, this is the stuff. This is what happens when you invite Mark over here. He starts talking about taking your shirts off and dancing.
I like to get naked. What's wrong with that?
That bullshit right there. Okay, listen, I have a question for you, gentlemen. And I want to thank you guys, and I know this is running long, Steve and Mark, too. You don't have a choice. You're stuck here, Mark. But, Steve, you're on the phone. You can hang up whenever the hell you want to.
I can walk out.
Sure.
You don't have my keys.
That's true. You'd probably get lost, though, since it took you like six times coming up and down the road. But at any rate.
Steve, don't come here in this neighborhood. It's sketchy after dark.
Oh, shit.
Stay in Wesley Chapel, my friend.
So I'm gonna give you a last name, because when we hear Tepper talk about his offense, talk about players in space, it feels a little Kelly-esque, which is going to be probably the next 3 to 7 years of offense, which is fine. There's a lot of good math and solid geometry behind this. Demps, do we see Demps do anything for the Bucs, or is he the phantom of fast guys past?
I wouldn't count on it. I mean, he's going to run track again. He told Rick Brown tweeted it the other day, because Greg Almond had tweeted that he wasn't sure. Somebody asked the question, and Rick and Jeff are pretty close, and Rick tweeted out that he's planning on running. You know, when the pro season, I think it starts back up in April, so he's going to be running, I say pro season, I don't know what it's called, but whatever it is, in track and field,
sure.
He's going to be he's going to be back running again. And again, I didn't agree with everything Greg Schiano did. A lot of things I didn't agree with. The one thing I did really like about Greg last year, he smiled and said, we are looking forward to having Jeff Demps. He was pissed at Jeff Demps last year. He was not happy with Jeff. He wanted guys, and it only makes sense. I mean, if you want to play football, you want to run track, you need to make a decision because we don't want any part-time players here. So I kind of agree with him on that. And I'll be honest with you, I think Lovey's going to have kind of that same mentality. You know what I mean? We need to make a decision here at some point. What you're going to do? Are you going to commit to football full time? Because as we saw, you know, he was two games into his career, he ends up tearing his hamstring. And I'm not saying that's because he wasn't in football shape, but it does make you wonder just a little bit.
Now, Steve, I don't know if you have an opinion about Demps, but I know you may have an opinion about another guy who's allegedly available for a third round pick, who also brings some speed to the game, in one DeSean Jackson. What are your thoughts about adding some speed in any of those formats?
Yeah, if we trade for DeSean Jackson, I'm going to burn one bug down one match at a time.
Hit the dump button
That's
quick.
How slow it's going
to
be.
No dump here, brother.
I'm going to burn the whole damn building down one match at a time because it's the same fucking situation we got in last year with Revis.
Yeah.
The only difference is DeSean Jackson actually has a longer contract. But guess what? We're going to be paying him $10 million fucking dollars to complain every year that he's underpaid.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have given up a draft pick again. So guess what? And he's, you know what he's probably going to do? The same thing that Reaver said. Well, yeah, I'll come there if y'all trade for me, but I ain't going to play very hard unless you redo my contract. So please, pretty please, let's not even think about getting DeSean Jackson because it really – yeah, y'all really know I'm trying to put this whole cutting Reaver shit behind me, right? But it's really still lingering deep down in my chest, especially after he signed, which I knew he was going to do, with the Patriots for $12 million. So I'm trying to, you know, okay, let's move on. We got Vernon. We're still looking for a third cornerback. I'm trying not to freak out about that. I promise you, they will have to go ahead and blockade one buck if we trade for DeSean Jackson because we should have just kept Reaver if we're going to do that shit.
Well, it's a damn shame you don't have a strong opinion about this, Steve.
Hey, man, listen, you know I don't like to hold back now.
No. That's good. All right, listen, I want to open the floor up here for both of you guys. You guys are both accomplished journalists in your own right. Steve, I know you're writing regularly. You're putting out these damn analysis, and they're going deep like you always do. So what's the one thing you want to tell the listeners out there that they should be out there reading? Who's the guy who's really snapped your head back and you've been watching film that you think people are sleeping on?
As far as the draft or
sure. Either one, whichever one you think is the most impactful to Bucks fans.
Oh, for Bucks fans.
Yeah, these guys don't give a damn about the rest of the teams in the league.
Okay, here's what I'll say about Michael Johnson. Obviously, that's my special. It's actually a two-tiered statement I want to make about it. First of all, what you need to understand about Michael Johnson is he's a guy that doesn't have a lot of moves yet. But that should change under Lovey. The reason why his sack totals went down last year as opposed to the year before is because the Bengals want their guys to bull rush most of the time. Okay, Michael Johnson is not really a huge guy.
He's pretty good at
getting some power going. He's just not quite as good as ripping off and turning the corner after he gets the guy pushed back. Now, when you have Geno Atkins inside, it doesn't matter because the quarterback can't go anywhere if he tries to step up, he's going to get sacked. So those guys are standing at 7 yards deep, which made it easy for Michael Johnson to push his guy back and rip off, and then the quarterback's right there. Geno Atkins is gone, you know, played less than half the season. Now a lot of those plays that would have been sacks the year before, he just misses the quarterback, just goes a little bit past him, because the quarterback was able to step up because Geno Atkins isn't there. Obviously, we have Gerald McCoy right now. I think Gerald McCoy is giving Atkins a run for his money as the top three technique in the game. And so Michael Johnson should be back. First of all, he should have better moves. Second of all, he should be back getting a lot of sacks because the quarterback shouldn't be able to step up in the pocket. The second thing I'll say is you might, you know, I know everybody likes Adrian Claiborne. I don't know how Adrian Claiborne stays on this roster except for as a backup because he's going to play the same position as Michael Johnson. You can write it down, take a picture. I don't care. Michael Johnson is just starting right in.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Claiborne can't play left end. Why? Because that's where teams run the ball. That's where they put their tight end all the time. And he can't – I ain't going to say he can't. Right now he's having trouble playing against tight ends, head up. And that was a lot of the reason why they had him flip-flopping this past season.
They absolutely had him to the weak side every time.
As crazy as it sounds, I think Daquan Bowers has a much better chance of starting and being on this roster at the end of August than Adrian Claiborne right now.
Wow, that is an interesting piece of feedback, Steve.
We've talked about that, Steve, Scott and I, too, and kicked that around a little bit. The one thing I do like about Adrian, and I think that it'll appeal to Lovey, and I think you would agree, this guy is a high-motor guy. I mean, he was second on the team in tackles for loss last year. A lot of people didn't realize that. I think he had 19. He was second to Lavonte David. I mean, but you're right. What Greg Schiano did was he put him on the weak side. I mean, he played off of the tight end because you're right. He had a hard time. And if you noticed, on the left side is when he stood up most of the time. He wasn't down on a three-point stance. And part of that has to do with the Herb's palsy issue that he has and the strength in that arm and the fact that it's a little shorter, whatever the issue specific issue is. So I certainly see him as a backup guy. You know, I could see him come in rotationally. I don't think he's an inside guy. I think a guy like I think this team has some guys that can play inside or outside. I think Daquan Bowers did a couple years ago, moved inside after Joe got hurt. He wasn't that effective inside, but he can play inside.
He should never go and do that again.
That was 2011. That was just brutal when they were signing. You know, they tried to sign Derek.
They tried a little bit when he came back at the end of 2012 too, and it did not go well.
No, it didn't go well, and not at all. And Will Golston, though, that's a guy that I don't know how much film you watched of him. I mean, you certainly saw him play last year, but I thought he really – I mean, he outplayed Daniel Tao Nyasem and Adrian Claiborne – I mean, and Daquan Bowers, you know, just in the last few three or four games that he ended up starting. I mean, he was by far more effective than both of those guys were statistically, but he's a guy that also could move inside. To kind of go off on what he's saying, this defensive line, you could see – you could feasibly see the Buccaneers going with the Seattle model to agree where they've got basically four defensive ends rushing the passer coming in on third down. And what you said about Michael Johnson makes a lot of sense because they're gonna do like you guys used to do. You're gonna stop the run on the way to sack the quarterback. That's going to be Joe Cullen and Lovie Smith's motto. I mean, they're not going to be we're going to lead the league in stopping the run. I mean, they're going to go after the quarterback. They're going to get up the field and do that. And I think that's where Michael Johnson's strong suit certainly is getting up the field, that quick burst off the ball. He's not going to be – because in Cincinnati, he was required, as Steve said, to, you know, look at the run, look inside for – I mean, he wasn't just a free guy to go after the quarterback on every single play. There was a lot of different responsibilities that he had. I think he's going to be freed up to do that. And there's no question, when Geno Atkins went down last year, his production dropped. Now – and, Steve, this is a legitimate question I want to ask you because it kind of bothers me a little bit. Every coach that says this when the pass rush is terrible, they bring up, well, pressures, and we got the quarterback off his spot. Isn't the ultimate thing getting the quarterback on the ground? I mean, a guy like Drew Brees, getting him off the spot doesn't mean a whole lot because he's still going to complete the ball. Ryan, too, to a degree.
It depends.
I mean, because Michael Johnson had a great year last year as far as hurries and pressures. In fact, he was towards the top of the AFC in that, but he didn't get the quarterback on the ground but 3.5 times.
Well, here's the thing about it. You only get a hurry if the ball is incomplete,
okay.
Right? If you can blow the quarterback up, if the ball is complete,
then
it's not
a hurry.
Okay. So it is a big deal in that sense because that's 60 incompletions if he had 60 hurries.
Right.
And I'm sure some of those hurries are on third down, so that means you're getting the ball back.
Sure.
Now, would you rather have a sack? Absolutely, because there's an intimidation factor with a sack. There's the fact that you have an opportunity to get the ball back right then with a sack called fumble. But there is something to be said for getting a lot of hurries as well, especially like when you say get a quarterback off the spot. Drew Brees is one of those type of quarterbacks that's going to get off the spot on his own. He's always climbing the pocket.
Yeah.
So for him, it's not necessarily a good thing to get him off the spot. For him, you want to keep him from stepping up. So maybe if Gerald McCoy has got good rushes and he's not allowing him to step up, but he's allowing Johnson to come around the end and get the sack, whereas he didn't get the sack. He's a very important part of that rush because he's stopping him from stepping up and allowing his end to now come around the horn and sack the quarterback. So it all kind of works together.
Right.
You can't devalue sacks, and that's the thing people like to do. You can't devalue them, But at the same time, you can put a value on hurries because it's the next best thing.
Okay.
It's interesting, guys, as you guys are chatting about this. I think this is going to be a really healthy debate as we go through training camp and as we get into preseason. What's going to happen to the defensive end position? I make no bones about the fact I like Adrian as a person. I also think he's got the motor that I've always liked in a player. It's interesting to see whether the Irv policy is actually an issue. And Bustle, NFL Osfi, when he wrote the evaluation from last year, he mentioned it as well, Steve. You know, people have talked about even in the draft whether that causes him a problem in tackling in the run game. But when you look at
the story when he first came out was he could only play on the right side because of the Irv policy.
Right. But I never heard him say that. I never heard him.
But, well, and he's not going to say that. I mean, this is a guy earning it. It doesn't matter if his arm falls off. He's going to say, I can still play the left side, coach. I mean, that's just the kind of guy he is. But again, the previous regime, they had concerns about him playing on the left side, too.
Now, here's the thing. And look, if it's somebody in the chat room or anybody else, you can tell him to call me or come see me because I can help him with this. I really think it's a technique issue because a lot of guys feel like I can't play a six technique because either they're taking too long of a step or their hands are not quick enough getting on the tight end. His is a combination of the two. I don't really care that he has an Irv palsy because from watching him on film, if he keeps his hands close, he can do it. He just hasn't been taught how to do it.
Right.
And he goes so hard if he has a little bit of technique, because he would try to go against the tight end, and he would take a long step, and, you know, it's just, it don't take a lot. It don't take more than common sense to say, if you come off and hit a tight end, and he's got both feet in the ground, and you only got one, guess who's going to win most of the time?
Right,
yeah.
He is. And so I really feel like, you know, Joe, maybe, I ain't saying I'm the only person that can teach him this. Joe Cullen probably could. So I'm not going to say write him off 100%. Right. But he's going to have to want to do it. It's going to be have to something that he says, like he really looks in the mirror and says, okay, this is a problem for me. I have to find a way to solve it. I had to do that myself when I was playing. What I did was I said, let me see who's the best six technique on our team. They have to be Chidi or Hunter too. I said, I'm going to study everything Chidi does in a six technique. Chidi was a little bit slower off the ball than everybody. But it helped him in a six technique because he came off with both feet in the ground. Okay? He was quicker with his hands with everybody, too. And so I said, okay, well, I'm going to do everything Chidi do, and that's how I got better. But if you never say to yourself, this is a problem for me, and I kind of got the impression after watching him over 3 years and never getting better at it, that he doesn't necessarily think it's a problem, but it is. So if he takes it upon himself, I'm going to fix this one part of my game, then who knows, maybe he sticks around, but he's going to have to take it upon himself to figure out how to get it done.
And you mentioned Joe Cullen. I don't know what your dealings with Joe has been or if you've just seen him from afar, but I think that was a great hire. I mean, he's certainly a disciple of Rod Marinelli, and I think most of us would agree that Rod's one of the best, if not the best, defensive line coaches. Now he's defensive coordinator in Dallas, but the guy does a good job, and Joe Cullen is really a disciple of him. And Joe mentioned a guy in Jeremy Mincy in Jacksonville who was a reclamation project, a guy that was kind of a high-round draft pick who kept getting cut, coming back. It really took him that third time to be a 9-sack guy or 10-sack guy, whatever it ended up being. And when we talked to Joe one day about Daquan Bowers in particular, he kept mentioning Mincy in that situation that they had in Jacksonville. And he's not ready to give up on Daquan Bowers by any stretch. And I think that this guy is going to help this defense. And I'm not knocking Randy Melvin. I don't know Randy that well. But I certainly think Cullen is an upgrade coaching-wise over what the Buccaneers were doing the last couple years on the defensive line.
I think in a lot of ways they've upgraded. Now, so Steve, your call was on the defensive line. That was with Johnson. Mark, you responded to Steve, but with regards to Pewter Report, what's the thing other than the mock draft that you keep teasing us about, and we know Watkins is the first? And
hey, guys, my phone's about to go out.
All right.
I appreciate you having me on. I'll try to listen in so I can hear what Martin has to say, but my phone is just about to go out.
Not a problem,
right, Steve.
Thanks as always for joining us, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
Appreciate it.
Steve White signing off. As always, great to have him here. We'll transition back over to just Mark and I. And it's funny because, you know, normally when you do call-ins, you do a call-in. And, Mark, you're a real radio guy, and I've only got a chance to dabble in that. But typically you have them on for 6 minutes, 9 minutes, mm-hmm. inside of a segment, blah, blah, blah. And that's just not how we do things here. And even when I try and do that for people, like Steve generally likes to be on here. He likes to do it. So big thanks to Steve for calling in here. We were going to you, Mark, for the thing that Bucks fans need to be paying attention to you on Pewter Report that maybe they haven't seen or that you want them to pay particular attention to.
Gosh.
If you can imagine a Bucks fan not reading everything that you put on Pewter Report.
Right.
By the way.
You know, I think, you know, I'd like people to really pay attention, you know, as we approach this draft. We do spend a lot of time, you know, I mean, granted, we're not scouts, okay? We understand that. But we do take a look at a lot of things. We talk to a ton of people. Certainly we go and watch these guys, you know, during their All-Star games and things like that. So, you know, we spend a lot of time really focusing on the draft and trying to put the pieces together. It's impossible. I mean, Mel Kiper, and I don't know that he – I believe that he didn't have a single first-round draft pick right last year in the first-round mock. You know what I mean? And this is a guy who that's all he does. So it is nearly impossible to do it. But, you know, we take a look at a lot of things. We try and, you know, connect the dots to a degree, whether it be a Tedford connection with Carr, you know what I mean, or Warhop with O'Neal. You know, coming over, O'Neal Cousins coming over from Cleveland and things like that. But, you know, we're really going to ramp up our draft coverage and the draft. It's nice this year because we're going to have a little bit of a break, a little bit of time to do that. So, you know, if you're a big draft person, you know, pay attention to a lot of our draft stuff this year. And there's a lot of really good draft websites out there. I'm not saying come to us exclusively, but Scott, I love free agency. That's what I love doing. I love being on the phones with agents. I love calling the players. I love finding out what's going on. And, you know, that's what I really enjoy. And we worked our rear off the last couple weeks, really last 3 weeks with free agency. And, but Scott is big into the draft, and we're going to really have a ton of good draft coverage between him and one of our other writers, Eric Delarata, who just watched count. I mean, Scott's got a 500-hour DVR, and I think he's probably got 400 hours of it. I mean, this guy tapes every college football game that comes on during the college football season. You know, and we spend a lot of time making phone calls to scouts, making phone calls to people that we know inside, you know, and different people like that. I mean, we pick the brains of a lot of people to try and, you know, figure out, you know, who's a good fit and who's not. Again, it's impossible to pick it all. But, you know, we're going to spend a lot of time really focusing on the draft in the next month or so because we've got a break from the NFL. It happens now in May instead of April. So normally we would just turn around right after free agency and immediately start the draft thing. But this gives us a little bit more time to spend more time dealing with it. Other than that, though, you know, I mean, I just, you know, I just hope people, you know, just pay attention to us when they can. I mean, just go on the website and skim through, see what we got. And if you're a Buccaneer fan, I think you'll like it. And we're not afraid to share our opinion. And our message boards, too, are a big part of what we do. We're like-minded Buccaneer fans. And they argue and they fuss. And I have to delete posts all the time. And people get personal. But you know what? It's a passion that these guys have. And even the nuttiest person we have on our message boards, I love. Because, again, they're passionate about what they do and this football team. And we're passionate, Scott and I, both about covering this team. I mean, there's just not a day that there's availability that we're not there. I mean, we're at one Buccaneer place every single time. Even when we're not supposed to be there, we're there. I was there last Tuesday when free agency opened. I was there till 9 o'clock that night. You know what I mean? And not that I expected to get any scoop. It was actually a nice, quiet place to work. Because my son was home on spring break. So, you know, I just wanted to get away from the family, let's be honest. But
that's why you're here. That's why you're still
that's
here.
That's exactly
I understand.
Why I'm here tonight, and I got no problem with this going until 3 in the morning. That's fine with me, as long as we get our dance in later to the caveman gang. But, you know, the point is you know, we love doing it, and I think most of our readers that follow us, you know, see that we do have that passion for it. You know, we can't claim that we're, you know, pewterreportfan.com or stuff like this, but you can't not help but pull for a team when you're around them constantly. And again, you can't wave the flag and run out in your jerseys. But, you know, when you develop personal relationships with the players and with the coaches and even with the front office, and I'm talking even ticket people, you know what I mean? It just, you want to see them succeed because you see the work that they put into it. And hopefully people see the work that we put into what we do at Pewter Report.
I think they do. You've been around, you know, long enough that everyone gets it, I think. And we certainly appreciate what you guys do, you and Scott both. And I've enjoyed what I've seen from Eric Delarata as well and the rest of the staff, which is great. Now, I do want you to check with the powers that be about the draft day three. We'd love to have you guys with us that day. It'd be a lot of fun. You know, typically when we throw together a little event, sometimes they turn into very large events, as our kickoff party did last year,
right,
which we still don't really know how it happened. It may happen this year. It'll have to have a new name because the no-fly zone thing is kind of dead. But regardless, we had a couple of questions that came in here I want to hit you with in the last section. Who do you think the best free agent pickup was of all of the shopping spree that went on?
You know, I'm going to go with Steve a little bit on this. I think Josh McCown is a clear upgrade to Mike Glennon. And I like Mike. I'm not one of these people that say, cut the guy, get rid of him. He's never going to be a good quarterback. McCown's athletic ability versus Mike Glennon's is night and day. Mike Glennon is a newborn colt, you know what I mean, trying to stand up the first time. And McCown is very athletic. I mean, deceptively athletic, in my opinion. I mean, he's not going to take off and run for 90 yards like Cam Newton is or Colin Kaepernick, but he's going to be smart with how he uses his feet, and he's going to be able to be athletic enough to do it. He's got a pretty strong arm. The thing about McCown is his smarts and the fact of his maturity level now. I mean, he's got three kids. He's got a wife. He's established. He knows that this is his opportunity, and I think this guy's really going to seize it. When you talk to a guy like Josh, and we talked to him for a long time after the press conference the other day, people talk about it factors, right? And it's hard to describe what that is. And Mike Glennon, I'm not saying he can't develop that. And he was a rookie last year. Not many people step in with that rookie and have that it factor. McCown's been around a long time. He knows what's expected of him. And whether he was just saying the right words, he sold me on the fact that he's embracing this opportunity. And when you talk to Lovie Smith, you see Lovie's conviction in having a guy like Josh McCown here. And there's no more proven point of Lovie's conviction than him naming him the starter right off the bat. There's no competition. Now, if Mike Glennon clearly outplays him and Josh doesn't grasp this offense and just plays terrible, you know, who knows who starts week one. But, I really like McCown a lot. And secondly, Werner, extremely intelligent guy. He's a guy that graduated with a degree in mathematics. Had a 3.08. I wrote it in the story today. I mean, a highly intelligent guy. And look, intelligence doesn't mean everything in football. If that's the case, then they're going to NASA over at the Cape and hiring a bunch of those guys to play
Myron
football.
Myron Lewis was very bright.
There are a lot of bright guys. But, you know, Werner, though, certainly has the resume, too. Now, again, I don't know that he's not Darrell Revis. And he said it. I'm not trying to be Darrell Revis. I'm going to be, you know, Altron Werner. And, I don't know. You know, it's going to see how he works out. But I really think here's the thing I want people to know. No matter what you think, I think we have to right now at this point trust Lovie Smith is getting these free agents that he feels very comfortable. Not just signing the best guys out there, okay? Signing the best guys that are going to fit into what he's trying to do. And he spent an offseason, a complete offseason, said it was the greatest thing in the world. He recommended it to all of us reporters. If you get fired, take a year off. But he said it was huge for him to be able to evaluate where he was as a football coach and what he wanted to accomplish and really get a head start on things. So I think people need to, kind of trust Lovie here. And it's tough with me because I'm like with Steve. You know, I'm still not getting rid of Darrell Revis, you know, bothers me to a degree. But at this point, you know, it's in Lovie we trust because, I use this term all the time, but it's absolutely true. You and I can watch football games and doing this and that. The guy has forgotten. Greg Schiano, as bad as you didn't like him, the guy's forgotten more about football than we'll ever know. Lovie Smith certainly has forgotten more about football than we'll know in our whole life trying to study the game. So, I'm trusting Lovie Smith at this point that he's got the right guys in here to fit into his system.
Well, I want to thank Steve White, who hung up. Hopefully he's listening to us on his computer right now and heard the follow-up. I want to thank you for calling in tonight. I want to thank Mark Cook for coming over here and joining us in Studio 76. We got a very high compliment from one of our regulars, Brian Shucker, who, you know, is a regular at tailgates. I think he's actually on the Pewter Report boards as well. Mm-hmm. He's a huge Bucks fan. He said that in all the years listening to the show, this was his favorite show.
Wow.
He enjoyed very much the chemistry between the three of us. I don't know that I'm included in that because – I'm just kind of facilitating, as it were.
Well, you've got to moderate, Mike Wallace. Somebody's got to moderate.
Well, you know,
this panel.
Nice. But at any rate,
I
wanted to
called
pass
you Candy Crowley, but
you could have,
because if you put a wig on,
hey,
you know,
I've got
you're
the pumps.
You're a dead ringer.
I got the pumps.
You have the breasts too. Did I say that out loud? Hit the dump button quickly.
Dump. Oh yeah, we don't dump here.
Oh yeah,
yeah, it's dumps for pussies. Okay. At any rate, Mark, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Thanks for all the things you do, Pewter Report. Are you going to give away free Pewter Report things? Or are you already done with that?
No, I can do that. I'm just sitting there thinking, this is what happens after I do your show, Derek. I go home and all night I think, God, I hope I didn't say too much. I hope I didn't spill too many beans, because I get loose lips sometimes, especially when you pour bourbon down my throat before the show. So
these things happen.
You know, those body shots I did off of you are catching up to me. So hopefully I didn't reveal too
much. I would like
much.
To point out how preoccupied Mark seems to be with my body and everything involved.
I'm completely comfortable in my sexuality. I
have this impact on everyone who I don't want to have this impact on. This is a curse that I have had to live with for many
years.
I
see you and I see myself in the mirror. That's all it is. And I'm in love with myself. That's Scott Reynolds. He'll tell you that all the time. Which is actually completely the most untrue thing in the history of the world. I have no ego.
Well, I tell you what, I enjoy the hell out of it when you come over here. So anytime you're willing, able, et cetera, we'd love to have you.
I like doing it. I complain for 2 days.
You bitch about it constantly.
You should hear what my wife. She's like, would you just shut up and just go do the show? I was like, oh, I don't want to. But but when I get here, I love it. It's a good time.
See, look at that. Look at that. So, all right. Well, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank you guys in the chat room. We'll get this podcast up.
Wait. Definitely. Mark at pewterreport.com. First 5, get T-shirts. If you email me, mark at pewterreport.com. Here's the problem, guys. We don't have any 2Xs left. So preferably the skinnier crowd out there, if you'd like a Pewter Report T-shirt, we can hook you up to the first 5 people. And I gotta limit it to 5 because we're running low on shirts. We're getting with our sponsor to get some new ones made up. But we can do that if anybody's interested in a Pewter. And sorry, Fred the Gurr, my boss, she yelled at me last time. We sent one to Cambodia or something. It costs like $47 in postage, so we're going to keep it to the continental United States.
Well,
if that's
Fred
okay.
Fred DeGuerre is a former offensive lineman. I think you'd have been fucked on the whole no.
But doesn't
2X
Fred
anyway.
Come over here once in a while?
He does from time to time, and Fred, I'll be joining Fred April 2nd. I'm going over to London for 12 days.
Oh wow. Well, you know what? I'll get you a shirt to bring to Fred if I see you before then.
That would be outstanding.
He might have to wear it as a belly shirt.
He can make it a tank top if he wants to.
That's cool.
So the first 5 people get a Pewter Report T-shirt from Mark. Get it to mark@pewterreport.com.
Oh, wait. You also have to be following us on Twitter. Let me just throw that out there. That's not true, but we hope you're following us on Twitter. We're trying to get to 14,000. We're at like 13,928. So we need like 73 more people or 72 more people to get to 14,000 by
the
end of the month.
Dude, your Twitter presence has jumped significantly from last season or the season before last season.
You helped me out with that, though, because I remember in 2011, I didn't know anything about Twitter. And in fact, I think you're the one that told me, get your personal account also, because you'll get different different people that'll follow you, or they'll follow you because they think you're tweeting Buck stuff, which on my personal account, at MarkCook1970, I really don't do a lot of Buccaneer stuff because my main focus obviously is the Pewter Report account. But you said you interact more, and I didn't understand it, but I've learned a lot over the last year. Actually, going back about this time last year with the Revis thing, I started noticing if you interact. It's amazing how many people have questions and trust your judgment or just want to get your opinion, whether they agree with it or not. Next thing you know, they're following you. So, interacting, and we do that. So if you're on Twitter, find us at Pewter Report, and if you've got questions or comments or whatever, it's not a problem at all. The only time we block people is when they use insane amount of profanity.
Insane amount.
I mean, everybody, you would be okay.
Oh, okay.
But
you guys have a very low bar, which I appreciate because that allows us, me and my friends, in.
yes. You're grandfathered in.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again for tuning in, guys. We'll get this podcast up here tonight. We'll let Mark go back and listen to his Elvis albums.
Hey-o.
And we'll see if we can con him into coming back. It will most likely not be next week. And then, as you guys know, I'll be in London the 2nd to the 14th with American Football Development Limited. So that's going to be a lot of fun, but I'll let you guys know what that's all about in the coming weeks. For Mark Cook, for Steve White, I am Old School, and I am out of here.
Tampa. Tampa. Bucks. Josh Freeman. Vincent Jackson. Claiborne back. Bowers healthy. Now, that being said, George Costanza. Mr. Steve White.
Thank you.
See, now that's some funny shit. Right? It's interesting. The hell was I? Impartial as I'd like to think I am. Here's the thing. So I give zero fucks. Here's the thing. I don't care. Right? Because I give myself credit for being a relatively smart dude. At any rate, the only reason he should go in the game is if Josh is wheeled off on a fucking stretcher. Doug Martin, Mark Barron, Sean Golson, Levante David, Revis,